Hello, geeks, freaks, and tomb dwellers, and welcome back to another episode of Tombs of Horror. As always, I'm your host, Dustin. I hope y'all had a good Christmas and got everything that you wanted and didn't get too drunk around family, even though sometimes that's the best way to deal with them. And also, before I get into everything tonight, I just wanted to say Happy New Year, and I hope y'all have a safe but fun New Year's Eve. Don't get too drunk because, as everybody knows, enough people get fucking killed on New Year's Eve because of fucking drunk drivers. So if you're gonna drink, drink responsibly. And that's my PSA for the night. And even though we're a day away from New Year's Eve, I just wanted to celebrate the upcoming New Year by talking about three of what are considered to be Italian director Lucio Fulci's best movies, and what's also considered to be the unofficial quote-unquote Gates of Hell trilogy, even though the movies aren't really all connected in the least. For those that don't know, Lucio Fulci was known for having quite gory movies for the time, the early 80s, you know, like Zombie, or as it's also known, Zombie Flesh Eaters 2, The Beyond, movies like that, even though by today's standards they're actually quite tame, but back then they were fucking gory as hell. So if you've never seen them, you should definitely check them out just to see what was considered gory back then, even though by no means are they wimpy. Some of them are actually quite gross in the gore, but, and we'll get into that in with the first film that I'm going to be talking about in a minute. But by today's CGI standards, they're pretty tame. I mean, sometimes pretty fake-looking. But anyway, let's get into the first movie, which is 1980's City of the Living Dead.
All Saints Day,
a demanding, implacable enemy
whose search for blood is never satiated.
During a seance held in a New York City apartment of Bingham Teresa, Mary Woodhouse experiences a traumatic vision of a priest, Father Thomas, hanging himself in a cemetery of a village known as Dunwich. When the images overwhelm her, Mary breaks the circle and collapses to the floor. The group presume Mary is dead and call the police, who suspect foul play. Teresa warns the police chief of an imminent evil, while journalist Peter Bell begins to investigate Mary's mysterious death and visits her grave as she's about to be buried. However, she's still alive, and Peter saves her after hearing her cries from underground. Peter and Mary then visit Teresa, who warns them that according to an ancient book of Enoch, the events Mary witnessed in her visions, are persecutor to the eruption of the living dead into our world. The death of Father Thomas has opened the gates of hell, through which the invasion will commence on All Saints' Day, which is just a few days away. In Dunwich, a young vagrant named Bob visits an abandoned house, but flees after seeing a rotting carcass. Across town, Jerry, a psychiatrist, is in consultation with Sandra, a neurotic patient. When Emily Robbins, his 19-year-old girlfriend and personal assistant, arrives, she tells Jerry that she's on her way to meet with Bob, whom she has been trying to help. That evening, Emily finds Bob at a derelict garage, exhibiting strange behavior. The supernatural apparition of Father Thomas then appears as Bob runs away, smothering to death the frightened Emily with a maggot-covered hand. Next morning, Emily's body is found, and Emily's father tells the sheriff and Jerry of his suspicions about Bob, due to Bob's previous history of crime. Meanwhile, Peter and Mary leave New York and embark upon their search for the town of Dunwich. That evening, Bob returns to a deserted house where he sees a vision of Father Thomas. And after Emily's funeral, her younger brother John sees a ghostly image of her outside his bedroom window. At Sandra's house, meanwhile, the corpse of an elderly woman, Mrs. Holden, appears without explanation on her kitchen floor. Sandra then calls Jerry for help, but as soon as Jerry arrives, the body has disappeared. The two search the house, but are disturbed by many strange occurrences, such as a window breaking, with the glass then dripping human blood. Meanwhile, Bob is taken refuge in the garage of a local man, Mr. Ross. Ross's teenage daughter, Anne, finds him and offers him pot, but Ross bursts in and attacks Bob, fearful he is trying to seduce his daughter, and he kills Bob by impaling his head through a drilling lathe, which is... I'm pretty sure that's not the way to deal with somebody that you think is fucking your teenage daughter, but what do I know? Anyway, the following morning, Peter and Mary arrive at the graveyard that Mary saw in her vision. They begin searching for Father Thomas's tomb and meet Jerry and Sandra. They then go back to Jerry's office to discuss Father Thomas's death, when suddenly the four are showered with maggots in an apparent supernatural attack. Jerry then receives a distressing phone call from John, explaining his dead sister has returned during the night and has killed his parents. They rush over to John's house and try to find the sheriff. While trying to get John to safety, Sandra is killed by Emily, who rips Sandra's scalp off. John then runs through the streets of the town and is saved by Jerry, who hands the boy over to the police. John's dad, Mr. Ross, is drinking at a bar when it is suddenly attacked by the reanimated dead people of the town, led by Bob. Ross and two other men are killed as a state of emergency is declared over the radio. Mary, Peter, and Jerry arrive back at the graveyard as the clock strikes midnight and All Saints' Day begins. They then descend into Father Thomas's family tomb, discover a cave of skeletal remains and cobweb grossness. When Sandra suddenly appears as a zombie and kills Peter, before she herself is killed by Jerry, who impales her with the wooden spike. Mary and Jerry then continue on until they face Father Thomas, who is commanding an army of the undead. Before he can kill Mary, Jerry grabs a wooden cross and disembowels Father Thomas, and the priest and the other revived corpses burst into flames and disappear. Mary and Jerry then exit from Father Thomas's tomb into the graveyard in the morning to see John and the police, and Mary is relieved to see John survive the ordeal, but suddenly becomes very frightened and screams as everything fades to black and the movie ends. This is probably one of Fulci's most well-known and infamous movies, but to me, it's not as good as people have made it out to be. It's actually quite slow-moving and boring, especially in the beginning. There is a lot of talk and not much else going on, and it takes a while to get to the zombies and stuff like that, even though there are some scenes that show gore, a lot of gore, especially one scene in particular, which is the most infamous scene in this movie, where a guy and a lady are driving, and they happen to see Father Thomas's ghost, or whatever you want to call it, just standing there, which causes the girl to bleed from her eyes, and then literally puke out her guts all over the fucking place. It's actually kind of nifty but grody to watch this scene. So if you've never seen it, this movie before and are going to watch it, and you're squeamish when it comes to gore, beware of this scene, and beware of the scene when Bomb gets his fucking head drilled open, because it's pretty graphic as well. One of my biggest complaints with this movie, however, is that since it's an Italian movie, it is overdubbed in English, and the English actors' overdubs don't always match up, or their voiceovers, I guess, don't always match up with the Italian actors' mouths. So it's kind of like in those old Godzilla movies where, you know, like the person on screen will be talking, but then the voice that's coming from the actor's mouth will keep running for a couple seconds after they're done talking. And it kind of gets distracting, I guess, to say the least. And it's got a 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 46% on Rotten Tomatoes, 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd, and I give it a 3 out of 5. And that leads us into 1981's The Beyond.
You are Liza, aren't you?
Yes.
My name is Emily. I've been looking for you. Where you came from, and hurry, leave this place. Sixty years ago, everybody in this hotel disappeared. Every last person. Called Spike, who lived here, closeted in his room, had found a key.
Tell me, with all those accidents, you think you'll give it up now?
I couldn't do that if I wanted to. Well, I won't give in.
here.
Is nobody here?
I can feel a presence. Somebody else is in here.
Oh, some weird story that Emily told me about room 36.
Emily? Who's Emily?
The blind girl that lives in the old house by the crossroads.
The movie opens in 1927, where an artist named Schweik works on a hellish painting in room 36 of the Seven Doors Hotel in New Orleans, Louisiana. He is dragged from his room by a mob to the hotel basement and killed for practicing black magic. As this happens, a wide-eyed woman reads from the ancient tome Ieban, prophesizing the opening of one of the seven gates of hell. We then fast forward to 1981, where Lisa Morel inherits the hotel and moves from New York City to refurbish and reopen it. Soon after she arrives, a worker glimpses a wide-eyed woman through a window and falls off a scaffolding. Local Dr. John McCabe is summoned and he takes the injured man to the hospital. And the bell for room 36 rings, but as the hotel has yet to open, Lisa dismisses it as malfunctioning. A plumber named Joe arrives to investigate the lack of running water, and in the flooded basement, he uncovers a bricked-off area and is attacked by an unseen entity. The bodies of both Joe and Schweik are then soon discovered by the hotel maid Martha and are taken to the local hospital morgue. Meanwhile, while driving into town, Lisa encounters a blind woman named Emily and her guide dog Dickie. Emily warns Lisa that reopening the hotel would be a mistake and that she should return to New York at once. And then at a bar in town, John urges Lisa to give up on the hotel project, but she refuses, explaining that it is her only remaining chance at financial success. Later, Emily visits Lisa at the hotel and tells her about Schweik and room 36, warning Lisa not to go up there. Upon examining Schweik's painting, Emily's hands begin to bleed, which causes her to run with Dickie from the hotel in terror. Lisa then notices that neither of them made audible footsteps as they left. And despite Emily's warnings, Lisa enters room 36 and discovers the Ieban, as well as Schweik's corpse nailed to the bathroom wall. She then returns to room 36 with John, but both the Ieban and the corpse are gone, of course. Lisa also tells John about her encounter with Emily, but he is skeptical, insisting that there is no blind woman living in town. Furthermore, he says that the house where Lisa claims Emily lives has been abandoned for years. Meanwhile, Lisa's architect, Martin, visits the town library to inspect the hotel's blueprints, and the blueprints reveal a large, unexplained space in the basement. Upon discovering this, Martin is knocked off his ladder by an unseen force, and as he lies helpless on the floor, spiders appear and eat him alive. Back at the hotel, Martha is cleaning the bathroom in room 36 when Joe's animated corpse emerges from the bathtub water and kills her. John then breaks into the old house where Emily is supposed to live, and finds that it is abandoned, but he also finds the Ieban and begins to read it, learning that the hotel is apparently one of the seven gates of hell. Emily is then confronted in her home by the animated corpses of Schweik and the other recently deceased people. She commands Zicky to attack, and although the dog chases away the undead, he next turns upon Emily and kills her. Lisa then enters the hotel basement once more and is attacked by an undead hotel worker. In her escape, she runs into John again at the hotel entrance, and upon investigating, there is no sign of the undead worker, and Lisa begins to question her own sanity. They drive to the hospital and find that it is deserted, except for a Dr. Harris, Joe's daughter Jill, and a horde of the undead. Harris is killed by flying glass, and John dispatches Jill when she transforms and attacks Lisa. John and Lisa then escape down the staircase, but discover they have once again arrived in the hotel basement. John notes how impossible the entire ordeal is, but has no choice other than to accept that it is real. They then proceed through the flooded labyrinth and stumble into a wasteland, the same landscape which was in Schweik's painting. No matter which direction they turn, they find themselves back at their starting point, and they are ultimately blinded just like Emily, and disappear, and the movie ends. Although this is considered to be Fulci's very best film, if I were going to have to say that myself, I would have to say City of the Living Dead, or even though I haven't talked about it in this episode, Zombie would have to be over The Beyond, because The Beyond is pretty plotless. Well, there really is no plot. But I would have to agree that the visuals and the goriness are its strong point. I mean, an eye gets torn out, there's a crucifixion, eyes are pierced, shards of glass fly all over the place, tarantulas eat a person alive, acid dissolve another unfortunate person's face. It's all quite bloody and gory, even though, like I said, it's comparable to, it's comparable to today's gore, I guess, even though this is all practical effects and not CGI. But they're pretty much, like I said, there pretty much is no plot. So if you like your movies with plot, this isn't for you. IMDb gave it a 6.8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes a 67%. Letterboxd a 3.6 out of 5. And I, once again, give it a... Actually, you know what? I'm going to give it a 3 point... No, fuck it. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5. And that leads us to the final film in this loose trilogy, and that is The House by the Cemetery, also released in 1981.
Someone's in here, Mommy! There's someone down there! Get the door! Don't worry, Bobby. I'll get you out.
Why? Who's there? Who's in this house?
Dr. Freudstein!
A woman goes to an abandoned house looking for her boyfriend. After she discovers his body stabbed with scissors, she is stabbed in the head with a French knife by a pretty cool-looking zombie, and her body is dragged through a cellar door by an unknown assailant. Now, don't get used to this fucking zombie, because although it is quite cool-looking, you will never, ever see it again. It's almost like Fulci completely forgot about it, and it's just there for no apparent reason. But anyway, in New York City, Bob Boyle and his parents, Norman and Lucy Boyle, are moving into that same house. Norman's ex-colleague, Dr. Peterson, who murdered his mistress before committing suicide, was the previous owner, and the Boyles are to stay there while Norman researches old houses. As his mother packs, Bob looks at a photograph of a house and notices a girl in it. In New Whippy, Boston, Bob waits in his parents' car while they collect the house keys. The girl from the photograph suddenly appears across the street, and the girl, Freudstein, whom only Bob can see, wants him to stay away. In the real estate office, Mrs. Laura Gittleson is annoyed, and her colleague hands a couple the Freudstein keys. She insists that it's called Oak Mansion and promises to find the Boyles a babysitter. When they get there, they find that Oak Mansion is in a poor state of repair. The cellar door is locked and nailed shut, and a woman arrives and introduces herself as Anne, the babysitter. That night, Norman hears noises and finds Anne unblocking the cellar door, and the next day, Norman goes to the library to peruse Peterson's materials. The chief librarian, Mr. Wheatley, appears to recognize him, but Norman claims that he is mistaken. The assistant librarian, Daniel Douglas, then informs Norman that Peterson conducted private research at the house. He studies records of the area disappearances and other demographic data. May then shows Bob a tombstone on the grounds marked Mary Freudstein, and says she is not really buried there. Indoors, Lucy finds a tombstone of Jacob Tess Feudstein, Freudstein, while sweeping the hallway. When Norman returns, he reassures her that some older houses have indoor tombs because of the hard wintry ground. Norman then opens the cellar door and walks down the stairs, only to be attacked by a bat, which won't let go until he stabs it repeatedly. Spooked, the family drives down to the real estate office and demands to be rehoused, but are told that it will be a few more days before they can move. While the Boyles are at the hospital to treat Norman's injuries from the bat, Mrs. Gittleson arrives at the house to tell them of a new property. Letting herself in, she stands over the Freudstein tombstone, which cracks apart, pinning her ankle. A figure then emerges, stabs her to death with a fireplace poker, and drags her into the cellar. Next morning, Lucy finds Anne cleaning a bloodstain on the kitchen floor, and Anne evades Lucy's questions about the stain. Over coffee, Norman tells Lucy that he has discovered that Freudstein was a Victorian surgeon who conducted illegal experiments, and then says that he must travel to New York to research Freudstein. On the way, Norman visits the library and finds an audio cassette of Peterson's, which documents Peterson's increasing madness and reveals that he discovered about Freudstein. But Norman destroys the cassette by dropping it into a furnace pipe. Meanwhile at the house, Anne goes to the cellar looking for Bob and hears childish sobbing sounds. Freudstein then comes up behind her, decapitates her, and then decapitates her after slashing her throat, and throws her head down the stairs, which Bob sees, and exits screaming. Lucy then returns to find Bob crying in his room, but refuses to believe Bob's account about Anne. That evening, Bob returns to the cellar looking for Anne, but gets locked in. Lucy hears Bob's cries and tries to open the cellar door, but can't, and Norman returns and hacks the door with a hatchet. The rotting hand of Dr. Floyd scene appears and restrains Bob against the door as the hatchet chops through it, and one of Norman's axe blows through the door, severs the ghoul's seemingly normal left hand, and Freudstein staggers back down the stairs. Norman and Lucy finally get in the cellar, which contains several mutilated bodies, including Anne, Mrs. Gittleson, and the couple from the beginning of the movie, even though, like I said, the cool-looking zombie from that scene is never anywhere to be found in the rest of this movie. Anyway, surgical equipment and a slab. Freudstein is a living corpse with rotting flesh, and Norman tells Lucy that the 150-year-old Freudstein lives by using his victim's parts to regenerate blood cells. Norman then attacks Freudstein, but the ghoul twists the hatchet away, and grabbing a knife from the slab, Norman stabs Freudstein again, causing rotting flesh and maggots to ooze out of his old lab coat. Freudstein then grabs Norman and rips open his throat, and Lucy and Bob climb a ladder leading to the underside to the underside of the cracked tombstone. Lucy strains to shift the stone, but Freudstein grabs her and drags her down the stairs, killing her by ramming her head into the concrete floor, and as Freudstein advances up the ladder, Bob tries to escape. As Freudstein grabs Bob's leg, he is suddenly pulled away by May, and with May is her mother, Mary Freudstein, who tells them that it's time to leave. Mrs. Freudstein leads May and Bob down the wintry grove into an apparent ghost world, and the movie ends. In my opinion, this is one of Fulci's worst films, and it's a bad conclusion to a trilogy, even though it's loosely, it's a very loose trilogy. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Once again, there's really no plot, and I really don't understand why they open with this cool-ass looking zombie, but like I've said multiple times while talking about this already, it's in the movie for maybe a minute and a half, and then it's never once seen again. So where the fuck does it go? And why are the people that it killed in the basement of Norman and his family's house? It doesn't really make sense, because a zombie definitely isn't Freudstein. It's just some other random zombie that, like I said, I guess Fulci kind of forgot about. But anyway, other than that, a lot of this movie is annoying. Like the scream, like if when someone screams in this movie, it's really loud and it's really fucking jarring. Like they turn the sound up for it way the hell up. And it, like I said, it's just really jarring and annoying. And the character of Bob, the character of Bob is probably one of the dumbest kids you're ever gonna see in a horror movie. And he's so whiny and bratty and annoying that it makes you hate the character. I know I did. And so that's a big downfall for this movie. IMDb gave it a 6.2 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes a 45%. Letterboxd a 3.3 out of 5. And I give it a 2.4 out of 5. And that just about wraps it up for this episode. As always, you can reach me at darksyde9034 at gmail.com. And also, at the beginning of the year, I'm going to have a new six-song EP, Direwolf, out on Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, Apple Music, all the normal major music platforms. So be sure to look for that, and when it's out, check it out. And that, also, like I said before, guys, have a happy, fun, but safe New Year's Eve tomorrow. And that's going to do it for me tonight. I'm Dustin, and this has been Tunes of Horror. See you guys next time.